Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Behind the microphone, this is the horn, headonradionetwork.com. That's your home page for the listen live button, etc., the daily show posts, what have you. You can get the horn also by going to various streaming apps for your smart devices and tablets, things like the TuneIn Radio app and the Stitcher Internet Radio app. The podcast address is over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And, yeah, you can also get the podcast iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Tuesday. It is the 9th day of July, 2013. This program is live, and it will be for as long as I can do it. And I'm not trying to be dramatic. I just still feel like crap. You may have heard Dr. Bill cough a couple of times during his program. I have a sneaking suspicion he and I both have the same thing, and it ain't no fun. It's really no fun. And apparently, the more I look around, a lot of people have or have had this thing recently, and it is no walk in the park. It's kind of like having your own, your very own mule who periodically kicks you in your bronchial tubes just for the hell of it. But we'll try to get through because I especially want to see, I want to make sure that we get something going this evening. That is, to wit, at about in about 27 minutes, about half past this hour, our good friend Mike Wiggins, who is the tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of the Ojibwe people up along the Bad River in northern Wisconsin, will join us to update us on what is happening there in the lands that his people have occupied, well, darn near before time. And it is disturbing, to say the least. And I wanted to bring Mike on to talk about it because this is one of those instances where, rather than me telling you third hand about something that's going on, I think you need to hear it firsthand. I hope, or at least I hope I'm right in making that supposition. So that's coming along at about 6:30 Eastern Time. Let's see. Tonight's fundraising goal is, drumroll please, nah, don't bother, $340. That takes into account last night's shortfall, tonight's $150 goal, and the little bit of extra left over. $340. 34 people at $10 a piece, and the rest of the math that goes with that. Fingers are crossed. Yeah, I apologize to folks listening to Dr. Bill. Like I said, Agnes was producing back here, and I think she had him a little bit overmodulated. So hopefully that won't happen twice. Old equipment, what can I say? So this is Titanic Tuesday, and we will get to the Titanic Tuesday stuff in short order. But you know, we're going to keep things fairly open until 6:30 when Mike Wiggins, I expect, joins us. Wanted to share though with you a note coming in from our buddy Tosh. Tosh wrote in regard to Dr. John's note about referring to the Asiana crash yesterday morning on MSNBC as a miracle. Tosh wrote the following. Subject line, a miracle. Bull. Of course, they ignore the fact that a lot of dedicated folks like me working for the FAA and associated agencies and civil aircraft manufacturers like Boeing have spent a lot of time, effort, and skull sweat trying to make aircraft accidents as rare as possible, and if they happen, as survivable as possible. A lot of the initial research that has made crashes more survivable was conducted at and by the FAA Technical Center near Atlantic City, New Jersey. Among the things FAATC worked on that I can remember are additives to jet fuel to keep it from aerosolizing under crash conditions so it burns instead of exploding, reducing the flammability of aircraft interiors. They even went to the extreme of crashing a Boeing 707 at NWC China Lake, loaded with dummies and a lot of sensors. Making crashes more survivable has been a big part of the FAA HQ portfolio for decades. As an intern, I worked in the pilot factors section of the FAA R&D directorate, trying to figure out how pilots make those critical errors that lead to airplane-shaped holes in the ground. One of the big issues at the time was wind shear, which dropped a 727 into Kenner, Louisiana, after takeoff from New Orleans my last summer with the FAA. I tried to stay there, but the Reagan administration was blocking FAA hiring when I graduated. Yeah, that would be Ronald Reagan. You remember Ronald Reagan? Yeah, he's the guy who famously said, B-movie actor that he was, "Well, the nine most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." Yeah, that Ronald Reagan. The guy who should have been impeached. You know, for the dirty war. Paramilitaries in places like El Salvador and Nicaragua. That Ronald Reagan. The Ronald Reagan who, along with the rest of the Republican Party, really got the ball rolling good on the notion that government bad, right? And it was, you know, it was during the Reagan era and into the Bush one era that we began hearing prattlings of little Brill cream headed Republicans saying things like, "The private sector can always do it better and cheaper." Being Republicans, they were, of course, lying. The private sector can seldom do it at all, and if they can, it is much more expensive, as we have learned during, and we talked about this during a certain digression last night. Oh, goodness me. But that's, you know, that's the operative philosophy here. By the way, while we're talking about Republicans, do you remember remember last week when we talked about, oh, who was the horse's rear end? I'm sorry, his name eludes me at the moment. The guy who wanted more Christian martyrs and just happens to be on Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's the staff there in Washington, D.C.? Or maybe not in Washington, D.C., but, you know, generally on Rand Paul's staff. And noted that, you know, this is a guy who wants to start a religious war in the United States and has said so openly. And we sort of said, well, we're not surprised we're on Rand Paul's staff, but golly Moses, at least it's only him. Wrong. Wrong. There's another one. Oh, dear. This story coming from Alex Seitz-Wald over at Salon. Rand Paul done got him another white supremacist on his staff. Jack Hunter, who co-authored Rand Paul's 2011 book and now directs New Media for the Kentucky senator, has a past alter ego as the Southern of... Wait a minute. Southern Avenger! That's a creep on the radio who was known for wearing a mask with the Confederate flag on it and advocating Southern secession. Oh, dear. This is a guy on our payroll. You know, he's working for Rand Paul, but just as a general reminder, you're paying his salary as his new media coordinator. You're paying his salary. And this is a guy who said, I raise a personal toast every May 10th to celebrate John Wilkes Booth's birthday. Yeah, really. Jack Hunter went on to say that Abraham Lincoln and Saddam Hussein were the same person. I mean, not the same person, but the same sort of person. They compare. Among other things, he also said that Abraham Lincoln would have had a homosexual relationship with Adolf Hitler. And then this. A non-white majority in America would simply cease to be America. I'm sure that Rand, like his daddy Ron, will claim that he has absolutely no idea, no knowledge of any of this. I mean, my goodness. You remember Ron, his daddy, who, when confronted with the fact that he had been mailing out the newsletters for years and years and years, speaking desultorily and derogatorily of persons of color, said, oh, well, I think I had someone else write that for me. I was just going out every month. I had no idea. I don't have a racist bone in my body. Yeah, like that. Yeah, Jack Hunter served as chairman in the so-called League of the South. The League of the South, quote, advocates the secession and subsequent independence of the southern states from this forced union and the formation of a southern republic. Gotta love this! Let's see. Of course, as Alex Seitz-Wald notes over at Salon, this is not the first time. It was back in 2009 when Chris Hightower was campaign spokescreep for Rand Paul, and he had to resign when it turned out that his website promoting his heavy metal band was laden with KKK gear, and on Martin Luther King's birthday holiday, sent out Happy N-Word Day greetings, the post of which was accompanied by a photo of a lynching. Oh, by the way, this Jack Hunter was also Ron Paul's 2012 campaign main blogger. Yeah. I had no idea. Some racist was writing things
saying that I believed in them. No idea whatsoever. I'm not a racist. Some of my best friends are negroidal.
Yeah. So let's see. To recap, Rand Paul presently has a Christian reconstructionalist revolutionary and a Southern Masked Avenger who celebrates the birthday of John Wilkes Booth, who, of course, murdered Abraham Lincoln. I tell you what, it just makes you want to stand up and sing, doesn't it, when you think about the patriotism of a Rand Paul. Hey, somebody get Code Pink on the line and see if they can get him some more flowers and chocolates, would you? Yeah, please. Yeah, oh well. So we have that. Which is not good. And it's turning out the Chicken Noodle News reporting now that what actually happened was that the landing gear to the Asiana Airlines flight at San Francisco International hit the seawall before landing on pavement. He hooked, the pilot did, tore the plane to pieces. This was, I remind you, based upon Dr. John's note of last night, this was a pilot who had less than 40 hours of time behind the 777 stick when they sent him into the air to start ferrying human cargo around the planet. Jesus. Of course, well, I mean, we wouldn't want to be regulating or anything, job-killing regulations. Oh, heck no. Oh, by the way, a little bit here, a little bit there. You remember a few months ago when all kinds of people had a hissy about the company that produces, and this was at the time of the NRA convention in, Houston? And people had a hissy that there were Barack Obama ballistic gelatin target dummies for sale that really bleed. And you might recall that early on I noticed that they also had one that was called the X or the ex-girlfriend, where frustrated gun goons could blast away at a woman. Yeah. And she really bleeds. Aye, aye, aye. Well, they're back. They're back with a new dummy. Great folks. Zombie Industries. Advertising material for this latest one. Bleeds when shot. Lower than a snake's belly. The most dangerous zombie in the USA today. New model. Gun control lobbyist. Only here's the interesting thing. In the photo for the gun control lobbyist dummy, they use in the background an actual photograph of real live human beings who are the who have been the victims of firearms violence. In this particular case, they have used a photograph of real gun safety lobbyists, one of whom is by name Colin Goddard. Colin Goddard, you might note, if you don't already, is a survivor of the Virginia Tech massacre. He was shot four times and survived. He still has three rounds in his hip and his shoulder. Yeah, they're using a shooting survivor to hustle their death fantasies. Colin Goddard tweeted, "Hey, at Zombie End, at ZOMBIEIND, would you remove pic with me off your ad for gun control lobbyist shooting targets, please? Already been shot." Merciless. Just merciless. What we see, that's kind of an incitement to violence, isn't it? Because it sure seems like one. Practice on our zombie gun control lobbyist target, and then go out and get yourself one. There's a high bag limit on them. Dear Jeebus. It is, after all, Titanic Tuesday. Sorry about that. We had some stockpiled Zithromax, and I started on that today. I sure hope it works. Really. It just goes on and on and on, this parade of hate and this parade of titanic stupidity. So we will have an abundance of things to talk about this evening. And just to let you know, what all of the background, so Mike, who's quite busy, will not have to go over it all. You recall me talking about what's going on in northern Wisconsin. In northern Wisconsin, there's a range, if you will, of hills called the Pinokies. They're part of a geologic formation called the Gogebic Formation. Gogebic. The Gogebic Formation. The Gogebic Formation has this crappy mineral-bearing ore in it called taconite. The ore itself is iron ore. It is of low quality and not high percentage. Well, if there's anything low to be gotten at out there, we've got just the guy for it. His name is Chris Klein. I pass his house just about every time I drive into Beckley. As you come in on 119 toward the toll booth for entry onto the West Virginia Turnpike, there is this vast estate on your right. And tucked up in the corner on the hillside is a freaking mansion of almost unbelievable size, with a lake in front, a man-made lake, and white picket fences all the way around the property. That's Chris Klein's place. Really. He is a billionaire. Like so many billionaires, he's a billionaire who was handed his wealth by his daddy. What we like to think of is that syndrome whereby one may be born on third thinking one has just hit a triple. No, Marty, this is Chris Klein, C-H-R-I-S-C-L-I-N-E. He has created wreckage and destruction in, for instance, West Virginia. He has also created wreckage and destruction in Southern Illinois, and wants to expand out of coal and into iron ore. And so it is that he set his sights on this this formation in northern Wisconsin called the Pinoki Hills. And he got the governor of Wisconsin, a guy named Scott Walker, you know it, you remember, to play step and fetch it on and the entire Republican side of the Wisconsin legislature to play step and fetch it on a rewrite of the environmental laws, which are among the strongest in the nation, so that he could go in and blow the bejesus out of the Pinoki Hills to get at this iron ore. That is Chris Klein. I just went over onto Google Earth, and I'm having a look at his place right now. If you want to look at Google Earth, go to search for, and you can see this vast estate. And I'm not kidding, it's vast. Search Prosperity, West Virginia, and look for the intersection of U.S. 19 and I-77 near Beckley. Go back up toward the interchange just a little ways. You'll see the big lake right by the highway. And then you can start zooming in on the Klein estate. Because it is monstrous. This is the same guy who owns a boat that he rents out, a yacht, a massive yacht, called Mine, M-I-N-E, Games, G-A-M-E-S. It's his actions and those of GTAC, Gogebic Taconite, his company, that we will be discussing this evening. And we will have that discussion just as quickly as Mike dials in, which should be any moment now. Mike Wiggins, tribal chair of the Bad River Band of Ojibwe people. Sorry if I'm a little flat. I'm trying to crank up as much energy as I humanly possibly can. I very well may have punted this evening, but for the fact that I wanted to make sure we get Mike on the air to tell the story of what's going on up there, because it is disturbing, to say the least. frightening. Yeah. Anti-American, you could say. Possibly illegal. You see, there are any number of possibilities. I think Mike may be dialing in now. Hi, Mike. Do we have you?
Yeah, hi, Bob.
Hey, good to talk to you, Mike. I've been telling everybody to, well, a little bit of background, just reminding them what you all have been up against there in northern Wisconsin. So I think everybody's pretty much up to speed. They started the steps toward the test drilling there in the Pinokies. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're doing exploratory drilling. I think there's 8 borehole drillings that they're in the process of implementing.
And this is of course preliminary to trying to go ahead and start using the high explosives to destroy the Pinoki Hills and poison the watershed of the Bad River and the Tyler Forks River and that entire magnificent area.
Absolutely, yeah. The hills and the mountains there, you know, as we've talked before, are absolutely pristine. Whitewater rapids, rocks, Class A trout streams, unbelievable area. The drilling, exploratory drilling, is actually a bit of a sham because they have over 250 core samples from those hills that they have proprietary interest over. What comes next is bulk sampling, which isn't quite getting into the mining permitting process yet, but it's darn close. That would allow them to take up to 10 tons of fill and overburden to study, and you know the environmental impact from that excavation in such a pristine blue watered area is very, very disturbing.
It's an absolute threat to the way that the Bad River Band of the Ojibwe people have conducted their lifeways for generation upon generations, is it not?
Absolutely. From a surface water standpoint, the waters from that particular mining footprint flow directly into our, our small tribal homeland. When you look at the heavy metals and other toxicity, the pyritic shale that's in the mountain and in the hills that would produce sulfuric acid drainage. From a surface water standpoint, it's just unbelievably tragic to even think about. From a groundwater, drinking water standpoint, it's an absolute travesty to think about. A USGS study has shown that the Pinoki Mountains there are actually the recharge station for the groundwater aquifers underneath our small tribal homeland. And really, groundwaters that probably stretch into other portions of Ashland County and affect other communities that are non-tribal. When you look at the surface water and the groundwater ramifications, and you think about toxicity, you think about the drawdown of the water table and private wells going dry, sulfuric acid drainage considerations, it's unbelievably compelling to oppose and stop this stuff from happening. And you've been such a wonderful speaker up in our neck of the woods, telling a story of what extractive industry has done to communities, from West Virginia and everything else. We can't let them in the ground. We're opposed to having them apologize and disappear like a puff of smoke later.
Right, because they may be gone, but their mess won't be, and your world will never be the same.
No, yeah, that's the thing. We're dealing with perpetuity and 7 generations and hundreds and hundreds of years of environmental impacts that are going to hurt our people, hurt our ecosystems, and their little limited liability company disappears like a puff of smoke along with any recourse. As well as I do, once you obliterate and explode the headwaters of a watershed, it's not like man understands how to recreate, you know, the genesis of a watershed system.
Oh, no, by no stretch of the imagination. In fact, I remember Margaret Palmer from the University of Maryland, Mike. Once I asked her just straightforward how long it would be before mountaintop removal could ever be considered a viable part of an ecosystem again, and she said, and she answered equally forthrightly, 100,000 years. How many generations is 100,000 years, Mike?
that's unbelievable, and like we're so kind of acutely aware. The type of destruction that these types of projects represent to waterways, to ecosystems, to drinking water, it's in the context of climate change. It's in the context of dwindling water resources nationwide and drought and predictions that the environment from a climatic perspective is only going to get more and more difficult to try and adapt to. Including, as we all know, very significant extreme weather patterns. And so when you look at the context, big picture, in the maybe 10 to 15 years of operation that they would try to get out of a particular project, mining project, and really from a bigger picture perspective, the minutiae that, you know, a few jobs would represent, and compared to the environmental carnage that they bring and the lasting detrimental effects to communities, when you look at that equation, those lasting detrimental effects in the context of climate change and what's coming at us, it just seems like we should be preparing and preserving some of these unbelievably pristine systems that are vital to Lake Superior, vital to the people and the flora and fauna. You know, I mean, we should be preserving and recognizing the value of these things in real time, so that 50 to 100 years from now, which is actually a short-term kind of vision, when climate change ends up manifesting itself the way some of the scientists are predicting, we have places that are working for us, in places that are going to be desirable to come to, you know, whether that be from people visiting, studying the natural resource wealth, tourist-based economy, or just, you know, coming to enjoy good, clean water. I mean, we should be recognizing the value of these places in real time, not fighting for our lives and fighting to prevent people from exploding these areas.
Some, I suppose, had thought that the era of the federal government and, for lack of a better term, white America encroaching upon what is left of Native people's lands was over. But this whole thing proves that no, it never ended. If there's something somebody wants, they will come after it. I have a question coming in to you, Mike, from Dr. John. A good friend of the program, he said, "Could you ask Chairman Wiggins if there is any chance that the Bad River people could appeal to the state to slow or stop the mining based on damage to culturally affiliated land in the Pinokies? I'd assume part of the permitting process includes cultural resource surveys. Does Chairman Wiggins know if that's been done, by whom, and if they have access to the report?" Dr. John asks this because he is a he's a historical archaeologist, and I think that's the perspective he's coming at the question from.
Yeah, I can't remember the specific language, but the new Wisconsin mining law that was essentially written by the mining company at a state level did away with a lot of the safeguards that were usually associated for archaeological significant areas. It's really sad when you look at the law and how they stripped away not only environmental protections, but some of the protections that were associated with kind of sacred sites. To appeal to the state, I can't see, unless there's a change in administration and some significant change in the makeup of the legislature, I don't see any real value in trying that. However, our tribe is not without some you know, mechanisms of defense. And we have federally delegated authority under the Clean Water Act through the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers to enforce our own water quality standards that we have set. We're on the cusp of having our Class 1 air quality designation. Those federally delegated authorities put us at the table eye to eye with the state of Wisconsin in federal law. And those federal mechanisms from a permitting standpoint we plan on working those to be autonomous of and free of some of the compacted timelines that the state of Wisconsin gave the mining company to, you know, permit their mine.
This new law was, I mean, it is shocking the degree to which it is a roughshod rewrite of everything, because as I noted to the Horn group here, Wisconsin had some of the best environmental laws in the state, and every last bit of that was gutted and scrapped and thrown away, was it not?
Yeah, it was really, really gutted. You know, there's provisions in there where if the DNR fails to respond in a really tight timeline to some of the DNR, to some of the mining companies' applications, they're automatically approved. And so when you look at the automatic rubber stamp approval combined with the paring down of administrative staff at the state DNR level to adequately review and put integrity into the evaluation of some of the mining company activities, it's scary, scary stuff. You know, we'll be wielding the federal side of things as much as we possibly can to protect ourselves and ultimately to do the right thing in a permitting process where a mining company could really, really hurt communities that are downwind and downstream.
Well, I certainly hope you get both your Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act certifications, because, a tale from West Virginia, Mike. If you go to the EPA's air quality monitoring website, you'll find that there are air monitoring stations all over the United States. Curiously enough, there is not one single air monitoring unit anywhere near any mountaintop removal operation. And, you know, that's central to being able to talk about what's being put into the air above an operation like this. I wanted to make sure that we fleshed out the reality as it exists before we went into what's going on presently.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few months, a harvest camp has been established in the Pinoki Hills in conjunction with the Lac-Couturier people. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that would be accurate.
And so you've got folks who are who are living the life ways. They're in the Pinokis. They've put in a camp. It's permanently occupied, and people come in and out. And in response to that, it turns out, I mean, I was shocked, Mike. I was shocked this morning. I monitor the Citizens Concerned About the Proposed Pinoki Mine page on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I find it so, I find the commitment and the determination so deeply, deeply inspiring. And I go on there this morning and I see this photograph that looks like we would expect it to be from the 1980s in El Salvador of some guy with an assault rifle in full camo, with a black face mask on his head and a boonie hat, standing amongst a bunch of forest background. And I just about fell out. That's a guy in the Pinoki Hills that has been brought in by GTAC. They brought in a cadre of these armed, and, you know, we call them here in Appalachia, gun thugs. Is that pretty much it?
Absolutely, GTAC. GTAC hired a private security firm that is essentially a military-style security force. The picture that you described is essentially, you know, a picture of what appears to be like a special forces kind of soldier standing there in the hills of the Pinokis. And, you know, excuse me, the fact that they're brandishing machine guns and in the context of what has really been an overwhelmingly peaceful resistance is just an absolute travesty. And it really tipped the hand of the callous disregard of the mining company for, you know, local inhabitants, local people.
How long have they been there, Mike?
I believe they just showed up just recently, I think last weekend, or within the last 3-4 days. You know, some of the peaceful hikers that were monitoring some of the exploratory drilling ran into them and then took their photograph, and it since went viral. We have a couple of Madison, Wisconsin legislators who represent our area, Senator Bob Jelk and Representative Janet Buley, who have formally called on the mining company to withdraw that, you know, military-style security force and get those machine guns out of the hills there. These are publicly accessible lands, and you know, come fall, there's probably going to be hunting and everything else, you know, citizens carrying rifles to harvest food. And when you think of, ex-military-style commandos patrolling with machine guns, it just creates, an ugly scenario and ugly potential for some type of escalation of, violence, I guess you'd say.
And it should be understood, this is not a homegrown paramilitary. These guys are not from Wisconsin, are they?
No, this is a professional firm. It's Bulletproof Security out of, I think, Arizona. And highly specialized training, military-style equipment. They have light tactical vehicles. They have winter vehicles, armored vehicles. Their gear, like I said before, is essentially in the style of a special forces operative, and, you know, machine gun, Glock on the hip, bladed weapons and everything else. And then, of course, full camo with face masks and all that. It's you know, I gotta say, what it's done is to a certain extent allowed our local area to play right into the hand of GTAC. It forced a lot of discussion around the notion of how people treat other people, and the mining company would love to keep us talking about that. A mining company would love to keep us talking about how people treat people or how people could treat people. What a mining company does not want, obviously, is us to talk about what a mining company is going to do to our environment. And so there's some psychological warfare here in terms of diversion. And then there's also that attempt to create terror. What's been happening here locally is really just a steadily growing awareness and resistance and understanding of how precious our resources are here in our particular area and what we stand to lose with this atrocity of a mine. As that resistance has grown steadily, GTAC understands that they got to try something unconventional to squelch, you know, the passion that's being displayed here. And machine guns in the hills is an attempt to try and scare away and stifle what has been a growing, passionate legion of people that oppose that mine.
Well, you know, I have remarked to you in the past, Mike, that it seems like every next step that I see GTAC taking looks like they're working out of a handbook from 100 years ago here in West Virginia. They don't, you know, this is exactly what they did 100 years ago in West Virginia. They brought in they didn't have catchy names like Bulletproof Security back then. They just called themselves the Baldwin Phelps Detective Agency, and in the annals of the lore of this region, they are referred to in short as Baldwin thugs. And they came in and they terrorized. We know here, I mean, there are not a whole lot of people alive anymore, but there. Who witnessed it personally, but their children and their grandchildren are still alive who can tell the story of a train that was called the Bull Moose Special that was run up Paint Creek here in Fayette County with an armored railroad car on it, out of which they stuck field grade machine guns and machine gunned an entire village of miners who were trying to withhold their labor. And then, of course, there's the armed march on Logan when the federal government came in and used, for the first time, aircraft to bomb their own citizens. The massacre at Matewan was a precursor to that. And then it got to the point where one of the local law enforcement officials who had stood up for some of the oppressed was gunned down by these Baldwin Felts agents on the steps of the McDowell County, West Virginia courthouse. I see this stuff, and having been up there to that magnificent, wonderful part of the world you live in a couple of times, I don't want to see that happen. But I don't know, to be quite honest, Mike, if the people running the GTAC end of things know anything else but force. And it certainly looks like they're running down that road.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And, you know, my take on it is if GTAC was going for terror, they missed their mark. They missed their mark with those machine guns in the hills, because what GTAC represents, and when they showed up on the Wisconsin scene and came to the headwaters of our homeland with their plans to explode and obliterate the headwaters of, you know, our waterways and our groundwater aquifers, they maximized and reached their full potential of terror right there. When you think about what they really want to do to our ecosystem and the impact that it'll ultimately have on our tribe and in our home, machine guns in the hills is nothing. That's a blip of a butterfly's wings, really, because what they plan on doing to the water resources, what they plan on doing to those hills and that unbelievably pristine, beautiful, clear water area is the height of terror. And having, I guess, grown a little desensitized to the shadow of what GTAC wants to do there in the Pinokies, those armed mercenaries in the hills, you know, for a lot of the tribal members that I've talked to around here, don't mean nothing. Just furthers the resolve to oppose, resist, and protect their home.
Well, I think that's the only way to approach this. It's something that, it's the reason that young people marched literally into the teeth of dogs and fire hoses in Birmingham 50 years ago, and why Gandhi did what he did. You can't respond with violence to violence. You're right. They've played their hardest card when they said that they're going to make the place that you live unlivable for you. Everything else is window dressing. Yet I have to ask, because there are things that just when I started reading more about this, these are people carrying semi-automatic. I mean, they are a paramilitary force. They are under the hire of GTAC. How in heaven's name is that legal?
Yeah, I'm not sure exact. I mean, there's open carry laws in terms of the weaponry. They don't have the legal ability to detain or anything like that. And when you think about what they don't have for jurisdiction over the citizens of Wisconsin, and the potential that exists with you know, these eager, I guess, military-style folks to exert some jurisdictional authority, the potential for bad things is just, you know, has just been escalated by the mining company. They had a security force that was adequate. I mean, for the most part, it's a witness approach to opposition. I mean, there's people are going to the drilling site, they're taking photos, it's public access, there's nothing they're doing against the law. It's taking photos, recording, and really bearing witness to what GTAC does, and as a byproduct of that, making the company even more acutely aware that they have to be accountable. To bring in a paramilitary style security force brandishing machine guns is an unbelievably unjustified overreaction that really smacks of disrespect to, like I said before, you know, the people who call this place home.
Well, the other thing that I find, and I realize these are detailed questions, Mike, but I saw one photograph of a guy standing in the woods, and he was masked. Many states, at one time or another, had what were called, and we still have one in this state, anti-masking ordinances and statutes on the books that say that, you know, you can't get together a group of people and put on a mask and, you know, go do whatever it is you're going to do. A lot of those things in southern states were related to the rise of the Klan in the post-Civil War era. Some of it was related to the fact that, upset oppressed people here in Appalachia would put a red bandana over their faces and around their necks, and hence the origin of the term redneck. But do you know, or can anybody look around and see if there's an anti-masking statute out there? Because it's those masks that lend especially offensive, I guess is the word I'm looking for, quality to all this. It's not just that they've got machine guns. They've got machine guns, and they are masking themselves from anybody finding out, or trying to mask themselves from anybody finding out who they are.
I think you made a really good point that I haven't really considered that much. When you look at the mask, yeah, the anonymity that kind of allows, you know, an individual to keep is actually a scary thing when you think about the fact that they're all geared up with weaponry, and if something did happen that was unjustified and obviously illegal, the fact that they're hiding their identity and making themselves unidentifiable is very disturbing. And I guess I hadn't really thought about that, but that's something that I'm going to look into. You know, the thing that I watched a lot of our citizenry, both tribal and non-tribal, deal with was the reality that the mining company brought these people and had them carry their machine guns for a reason. And when you think about machine guns patrolling publicly accessible forests in some of these beautiful areas, that reality of there are machine guns there, the only purpose they serve is to obviously unleash a bullet and bring harm to somebody. When that reality that these people are geared to cause harm to locals and to people who just want to be out in these beautiful areas hit home, it was amazing to see the reaction of stunned disbelief, of sadness, of rage that people experienced. And from the mask to the machine guns, to the camouflage, to the absurdity of it all, it really, really hit a lot of people very hard and in a tragic way.
Well, and that goes back to something that back in my December trip, it goes back to a conversation that I had with Pete Rasmussen, in that, you know, I said to him that I think Wisconsin, and especially that area of Wisconsin, but other areas as well, is a rather unique place within the overall panoply of the United States, in that there's still a modicum of civility left up there. It's taken a real beating during the Scott Walker era, but do you think that the shock of this will make anybody who has been formerly supportive of the blasting and demolitioning and demolishing and poisoning of that area think twice about their support?
Yes, I do. I think it's going to affect people that are sitting on the fence, people that have been paying attention and kind of just evaluating both sides can obviously see where the mining companies, you know, at in terms of how they treat the local communities. But even more interesting is the media bounce. What has been previously almost complicit media covering stories that are angled to favor and benefit the mining company and promote, you know, extractive industry. There is a huge bounce right now that is occurring as the stories of these, you know, these military operatives in the hills goes viral. Watching some of the photos that were taken by just citizens, you know, in the hills go viral onto AP news feeds and into some of the local news channel, you know, stories, and then go even further out into, you know, some of the blogs that are nationwide. There's an awakening going on, and I don't think the media can even ignore it, you know, that this is a travesty and deserves to be discussed.
Well, and I mean, there are things that I think people are still thinking about that make this even worse than it appears. Most of these mercenaries, and I'll use that word, I have no problem with it. Most of these mercenaries are, of course, military veterans.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have served honorably in the military. But we also know that in the wake of the Iraq War and Afghanistan, that we have a lot of veterans coming back with profound post-traumatic stress disorder problems. And to think that, you know, it only takes one person, and to think that just anybody with those problems might be among those wandering armed to the teeth in the Pinokies, it's deeply disturbing to me, Mike. It's just deeply disturbing.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, in our tribal community, one of the, you know, we honor our elders. You know, we work hard to try and take care of our kids. There's another special place of honor reserved for our veterans and for all that they do for, you know, for us back here at home and what they endure in some of the scenarios and places that they serve. What they endure does affect them, and that's sad. The fact that, you know, there might be a young person who's having some troubles because of what he's seen or done in the past as he's served honorably is scary, you know, and because this is America, and Wisconsin isn't a third world country. This is the breadbasket of the United States, where people take care of each other, where people hunt and fish and live close to the land and work hard every day to try and take care of their families. To see, you know, camouflage, machine gun toting men in some of these beautiful places like that is really unnerving. And the fact that there might be some there that could still be having some troubles with what they've endured while serving is definitely scary.
Well, while I had the privilege of being there at the Bad River Lodge, I made a special point of taking time, really taking time, to walk down that long hallway with all of those photos of Bad River people who have served in the United States military, and frankly, it gave me a chill, Mike, because those are people who, in one way or another, put everything on the line for a nation that ever so many times has not proven up to the task of doing right by them, but they went, and they went honorably, and they went nobly, and they went, and so I understand why there is a profound sense of reverence and honor for those who have done service in the military, who come from your area, and it is a profound, to my way of thinking at least, a profound slap in the face to every one of those people, to have these paramilitary types wandering in the woods that Bad River people, directly or indirectly, have already fought to preserve and protect and save.
Absolutely. I had this thought, you know, a couple weeks ago. When you think about our armed forces, you know, and all those honorable young people and others that are serving right now overseas and giving their all, they're not doing that for Monsanto to profit. They're not doing that so that GTAC can hire, military style security and scheme harder about blowing up beautiful places. They're there fighting for the rights of other human beings, not corporations. And what's taking place, you know, what took place here in Wisconsin was you have legislators that were at the beck and call of corporations and industry rather than truly representing, you know, the human beings that are here in the state. And I think that's exemplified with Senator Jelk and Representative Janet Dewey calling on that mining company to withdraw that security firm, while others who have seemed to represent corporate interests are screaming even louder with their silence.
Has there been any response, Mike, from GTAC to Senator Jouk's call for removal?
No. Last indications I heard from both of them is that there has been no response at all.
Well, when I saw the region, it was in cold times. The height of life and regeneration, the bearing of the foods and gifts of the land is well underway up there right now. I imagine there are things even with armed private army in the woods, there are things that Bad River people will be doing right now or doing very soon that are a continuation of lifeways that have literally gone on generations unnumbered. Tell me, Mike, when does the rice harvest take place?
Yeah, the rice harvest will be taking place in mid-August through September. And, you know, right now they're harvesting birch bark off of some of the trees in the Pinoki area there. They're making, you know, birch bark baskets and they're going to be berry picking, and they've been gardening and everything up there in the hills. It's been a beautiful thing to really see and take part in. There's traditional ceremonies and prayers being put up, constantly to help us with these matters. And these are all things that represent, us just living our life. And we're going to do that regardless of machine guns, regardless of, the plans of GTAC to explode these areas. We're going to use the good life that we live as Northlanders here in Wisconsin to oppose and resist this stuff. And there's power in that. There's power in harvesting and going after food and taking care of each other, you know, with some of the gifts that our natural resource and our ecosystems provide. So wild rice will start in August and September, and you know, from the hunting and berry picking and all that stuff will be in play, and of course the fishing is always phenomenal, and in spite of the mercury advisories, the fishing is always good, and there's people doing that too.
Well, you're beginning to make my mouth water, but in many ways. You're absolutely right. That is the best defense. Doing what you have been successful at doing for the generations, and continuing to do it, and not letting yourselves be intimidated. Mike Wiggins, if there is anything that I can do to help, you know I'm always here to be called upon. I remain deeply moved by my time up there, and deeply inspired. And I trust that the inspiration, and the inspirational activities. Will continue as you and ever so many others defend that brilliant, magnificent piece of life on Earth. And I just wish you well, and I hope, you know, nonviolence takes many forms. It can be a sit-in. It can be a protest. It can be a tree sit. But it can also be the things that we do in the courts. And I hope you are successful in all of them. And especially successful in going forward and not letting these people take away what is ancient and good and decent.
Well, I appreciate that, Bob. And, you know, I've said recently, you know, these are the times where open-hearted people need to bar the gates open. We need to keep our open hearts and work to keep them even more open than they used to be, because, you know, there's divide and conquer tactics. There's efforts to turn communities against each other. And you know what? All of us up here in this area, just like, you know, all of the people in your neck of the woods, we're home. We're neighbors, and we're going to be here long after these LLC companies go poof and disappear. And we want a good life. We want a good life for our kids, and looking seven generations forward, and keeping an open heart is one of the best ways to combat this stuff.
I believe in the rightness of what you say, and frankly, I've said before and I will say again, that Chris Klein and his cronies have no idea whatsoever of the people and the powers and the forces that they're fooling with. And I think with a statement like that, bar the gates open, I think you prove it, Mike. So keep us posted. And anything, like I said, anything I can do to help, I will. And I hope to get an opportunity to take this conversation beyond the good folks at Wisconsin Public Radio and beyond our little family here at the Horn, and maybe get a call from somebody who will help you get the story out on a national basis, because this deserves to be national. If there is a private army marching around in the woods of northern Wisconsin, there is not one single American citizen who can say, well, it could never happen here.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Bob.
Mike, you have a great evening, and thanks so much for giving me so much of your time. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. So everybody out there, take care. Thank you.
Be well. Bye now. Mike Wiggins, tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Ojibwe people. And that last is the absolute truth. If you can look at what's happening in northern Wisconsin and say, yeah, well, that's them, but not us. Badly deluded. Badly deluded. Because well, changes of any sort never happen, or seldom happen, on a massive scale. They happen one thing at a time, little erosions. And, you know, frankly, we talk about reaching out and communicating with your elected representatives in Washington. This is one of those moments. This isn't about Wisconsin law. Okay? The paramilitary units are on the ground in the Pinoki Hills, not because there's a law in Wisconsin that says they can do it. They are acting as a law unto themselves. And they can do it just about anywhere they want to. You know how loath I am to tell anybody that they ought to do this or do that. But this is a moment, and a profound one, when silence comes close to being complicity. Now, I'm not climbing up on the cross because I know we all need the wood, but it's why I'm sitting here in this chair with sweat pouring off of me, and muting the mic every 15 seconds to barf up a lung. I'm no martyr, but this story has to be told. This story needs a little bit of the time that is being dedicated to George Zimmerman or Paula Deen or Kim Kardashian or all the myriad things that eat up our existence. I've seen the Pinoki Hills. I've walked among the Pinoki Hills. I've talked to people who live within a half a mile of where the toxic blasting will come down. And if I cannot speak, if we cannot speak on their behalf, how in God's name can we expect anyone to be there when it's us? And I say that because I live in an it's us region of the country. And we know what it is to be quietly ignored while we're poisoned and die. We don't suspect it. We know it. And those of us knowing that refuse, absolutely refuse to be complicit in silence when some sick-ass hillbilly, Chris Klein, goes looking to take his poisoning roadshow to a place that neither needs it, nor wants it, nor God knows deserves it. It's about 16 minutes past the hour. We'll take a little break. And I'm going to drink a bottle of ice-cold water. Thanks going out this evening to Patrick, to Tamara, and to Sal. We are now only $330 away from our fundraising goal for this evening. I'll never draw a line between point A and point B on this kind of thing, but you are the ones who make it possible to shine a light that nobody else will shine on subjects that nobody else will shine the light on. I don't know. Maybe you'll turn on Chris Hayes tonight, and maybe Michael be in a studio somewhere talking to that audience. Maybe he'll be on CNN. Maybe somebody in the for-profit media will notice this. But we, by God, all of us, you, me, will do our part. So like I said, break, and then we come back. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
Fathers, they had pride. It wasn't perfect, but fought and died. 200 years of struggle for equality. Now we look more like a monarchy. The halls where justice did once reside has been sold out and replaced with lies. It's all money, power to the few. How long until they come for you? And he said that it can never happen here. And he said it can never happen here. Burn habeas corpus, tear up the writs, rubber stamps, Senator hypocrites. Those new detention camps weren't built to show. Posse Comitatus was next to go. And he said it can never happen here. And he said it can never happen here. fear rules a mob. You print the truth, you lose your job. The cream will mix it, safe for you. It's death for many, riches for the few. And you say that it can never happen here. And you say that it can never happen here.
Tuesday, July 9, 2013.
This is an unbelievable disaster that has occurred here.
13 dead, 40 still missing in Canadian oil train explosion.
We're hanging on by a thread right now.
Record floods paralyze Toronto. The State Department doesn't know the Keystone XL pipeline's route. Plus, innovation, the Dutch solution for air pollution.
All of those solutions and disasters straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Scientists can now definitively say that climate change is the reason ducks aren't migrating south. Still no word, though, on why D.C. has become a breeding ground for so many old coots and loons.
Oh, snap, Giuliana Forlano. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I've been saying for a long time that I had no idea how a new EPA administrator was ever going to be approved by this Senate. And we'll see. Gina McCarthy's nomination has been hanging for months now. But we have news as we go to air today that Republican Senator David Vitter from Louisiana will not filibuster her nomination. Now we just have to see if the rest of his Republican caucus will follow along.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He says that he got some concessions on transparency from the EPA, but I'm wondering what other concessions he might have had that are not publicized.
My prediction still holds that it's going to be next to impossible, if not impossible, to ever get a new EPA administrator under this administration. But we'll see.
We will see.
What do you have for us today? I know a lot of disasters in Canada. Last few days.
It's been a tough couple of weeks for Canada. First, there were devastating floods in Calgary. Then an oil train explodes near Montreal, and flash floods hit Toronto.
It looks like a war zone here. A large part of the downtown has been destroyed.
The death toll in the oil train disaster in Lac Mégantic in Canada now stands at 13 confirmed dead, 40 still missing 3 days after an unattended train carrying crude oil derailed, exploded, and demolished the core of the downtown area, incinerating at least 30 buildings. Officials say the cause is now under investigation, but it is an unmitigated disaster, as Conservative Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper said in a press conference.
This is a very big disaster in human terms. There's a beautiful downtown here that's been destroyed, and there really is going to be need for substantial reconstruction.
And on top of all that, the accident also spilled an estimated 26,000 gallons of light crude oil into the Quebec River, impacting water supplies downstream. Now, DeSmog blog reports that supporters of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline are attempting to use the oil train disaster to promote the controversial pipeline, saying the accident shows rail transport is much more dangerous than pipelines.
Oh, man.
But that's not exactly true. Now, stats on oil trains are hard to come by because it's new and barely regulated in both the U.S. and Canada, but the New York Times reports train cars actually spill less than pipelines because the volume of the spill is limited to the number of cars, whereas pipelines can spill for hours or days before a rupture is discovered. And get this, the U.S. State Department admits it doesn't know the exact route of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline.
What?
Yes, the Environment News Service discovered through a Freedom of Information Act request that the State Department does not have the pipeline's digital mapping data, like coordinates for the exact route or where it crosses bodies of water in West.
But they put out a preliminary report approving the route for this pipeline.
That's not based on actual coordinates. They did not ask for the coordinates, nor did the company provide them.
They just approved it?
Yep.
Okay.
Also in Canada, poisoned weather hits Toronto just weeks after relentless rains hit Calgary, forcing the evacuation of thousands of residents. Toronto on Monday was hit with a record deluge, a month's worth of rain in just 2 hours.
The water was about up to my stomach in the car. And the power just shut off.
Worse yet, the water supply, the sewer system, and the electric power were cut off to thousands of people, prompting Toronto Mayor Rob Ford to ask residents to reduce their electricity use.
Folks, I must stress, this is crucial, that we all reduce our electricity for today to help relieve the strain on our hydro system. We're hanging on by a thread right now.
Climate scientists have warned that global warming caused by burning fossil fuels would bring an increase in expensive, extreme weather events like these intense storms and rainfall. President Obama said bracing for climate impacts is what we need to do to strengthen our own infrastructure. But here's some good news.
Finally, about time.
The Dutch have a solution for air pollution. Dutch scientists on Monday unveiled their newest innovation, pavement that eats smog. Smog is the brown haze you see over cities. It's toxic when sunlight hits tailpipe exhaust from vehicles. The Dutch experiment shows specially treated pavement can break down and reduce toxic smog at ground level by as much as 45%.
That's kind of cool.
Very cool. Let's get some of that.
Yeah, we could use a little bit of that out here. Los Angeles. For much more on that and the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Radio, and you must find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Living in the wasteland of the free. Politics and dynamite. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. And they say they are Christ's disciples. They don't look like Jesus to me. Feels like I am living in this wasteland. Got politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around kissing people's ass. You may call me old fashioned, that don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in this wasteland. Got CEOs making 200 times the worker's pay. They'll fight like hell against raising the minimum wage. If you don't like the mister, they'll ship your job to some third world country across the sea. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland.
We are halfway through tonight's program. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And thanks again. Profound thanks again to our good friend, Bad River Chairman Mike Wiggins for taking the time he did take to have a conversation with us. I want to, before I go to the phones, and if you're on hold, please stay that way. 304-658-3333 is the number. The Skype line is tied up at the moment. I want to give you an idea of who is up in the Pinocchio Hills. Remember, Bulletproof Security, which is owned by an Arizona real estate magnate and provides corporate security, are the thugs, and they're thugs. Make no mistake, they're thugs. They're thugs no different from the Baldwin Felts or the Pinkerton men of a century ago, because that's what we've done. We've gone back a century. We've got a court that venerates Lochner and would like to reinstate the Lochner laws, the Lochner-esque laws on the country. We've got a country that is being itself plessyized into pockets of separate and highly unequal communities. And now, I mean, West Virginia banned the gun thugs, just to give you a little history. After they had gone so far overboard and, you know, murdering people, really, they were outlawed in West Virginia. Coal companies were not allowed to do that anymore. So that put a bunch of gun thugs out of business. Well, that's when the legislature, the West Virginia legislature, turned around and created something called the West Virginia State Police. And guess where all the old gun thugs went to get a job? Yep. So, you know, on the one hand, oh, we can't have these gun thugs. On the other hand, let's put them on the payroll. Let's make them answerable to the governor. See how it works? Yeah, just imagine, just because these are veterans who have seen action in Iraq and Afghanistan, who are stomping around up in the Pinocchio Hills, scared out of their wits. That's what the guns are for. That's what the pistols are for. That's what the weird-ass bladed weapons are for. Because they are scared of the people who are simply trying to preserve their ability to go on being human beings. And by the way, while I'm at it, there's a write-up of this story over at Alternet. I think you get two or three paragraphs into it before people like Mike Wiggins and my friend Pete Rasmussen and Bill Hart and Paul DeMaine and a lot of are just generally referred to as environmentalists. Now, it is clear that all of these good Americans have a concern about the quality of the environment, but the quality of the environment that they have concern for relates to their ability to go on being human beings in that environment. Now, Alternet is on our side. Please, for the love of all that's holy, would you please stop pigeonholing people into that ugly little ghetto called environmentalists? Please! Call us what we are. Whether it's Wisconsin or West Virginia or any other place that is threatened with being poisoned to death, please call us what we are. Human rights activists. Human rights advocates. But I, by God, am not going to sit around in the environmentalist ghetto and let somebody put me there ever again. Oh, what's this cat's name? I got it right here in front of me. And he writes a good story. I'm not angry with him. Or her. I don't know. Alex Kane at Alternet. The story is a fair attempt to get out the fact that there is a private army marching around in the Pinocchio Hills, or elements of a private army. I don't know what the magic number is to qualify as an army, but they're there. But yeah, that's a group of environmentalists are concerned that blah 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 blah. You know, that's what we are. We're just environmentalists. Emphasis on the word just. We're just environmentalists. We're just out, you know, people are just out there and they're all concerned about the birds and the bugs and the beetles and the butterflies. Just environmentalists. Because the minute you call someone an environmentalist, you minimize them. You dehumanize them. Because the absolute essence of the struggle, yes, it takes birds, bugs, beetles, and butterflies into account. But the first thing it takes into account is that the people who are living where these horrors are taking place are not going to be able to go on being people if the horrors continue.
Now you're environmentalists.
No! Okay, but a portrait. A portrait of the kind of fella who's walking around in the Pinocchio Hills, piss pants terrified. Oh, sure, he's got a gun and a face mask, and he can hide his face from people being able to... But no. This is the resume of one Kevin Francoeur. He runs security and investigations. He's a security operator at Bulletproof Securities. He's a former... See, this is the part that's going to send our buddy Mark screaming. He's a former infantry marine security operator out of Chandler, Arizona, the Phoenix, Arizona area. In the past, he's been a light-armored reconnaissance infantry scout squad leader for the USMC. He was educated at University of Phoenix. I guess he found out about University of Phoenix on the back of a matchbook or something. And... a graduate of Catalina High School. He summarizes his talents as follows. I held a team leader and squad leader billet for Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion. I've conducted 150 mounted and dismounted patrols for over 120 combat operations. During the operations, I was responsible for conducting entry door breaches. That means breaking into people's houses in the middle of the night. And house-to-house room clearing in pursuit of high-value targets and weapons caches. Which he spells caches, C-H-A-C-H-E-T-S. I also lead four-man elements in I also led four-man elements in coordination with three teams within my platoon and with light-armored vehicles while on foot patrols and VCPs. I have conducted 10 raids in Iraq that consisted of clearing out rooms to locate hostile threats, intelligence information, and securing a perimeter in the vicinity of the building structure. I taught and trained junior Marines and Iraqi commandos on room-clearing techniques, preparation of raids, assaults, and hand-to-hand combat training. I have conducted 150 security operations in the Al-Anbar and Nineveh province, Iraq. I was responsible for setting up 30 VCPs and TCPs in the Nineveh and Al-Anbar province, Iraq. I have conducted ID checks, personal pat-downs, thermal optic searches, and metal detector searches, as well as undercarriage searches, vehicle inspections under the hood, trunk, and the inside of vehicles. I've provided and maintained fortified security details on FOBs and small vehicle coils at night consisting of foot and vehicle patrols. During my security details, my shift rotation was 30 days in my area of operation. I have conducted close security protection for platoon commanders, company commanders, and battalion commanders. I also provided private security protection for EOD teams, villagers, sheikhs, and police chiefs, as well as Iraqi military compounds and Iraqi police stations. Provided security on the FOB in Sinjar, Iraq, near the Syrian border. I was part of QRF elements on the FOB in Sinjar, Iraq. Specialties. Tasked as squad leader, charged with route planning, security formations, and radio operations,
provided personal protection for the battalion commander, battalion sergeant major, and platoon commander around the areas of operation in Iraq on both dismounted and mounted patrols, escorted key individuals, high-value detainees, and valuables to specific secure locations, switched up the routes based on operational risk assessment to ensure safe delivery in a high-threat-level environment. Hoo-ah! Reckon this guy's got any PTSD going for him? Old Kevin Francoeur. What is that? French heart? Francoeur. What happens if one of these dudes has a Niniwa? No, really, Niniwa. That's good. Little Baptist always learned that it was Nineveh. But then again, yeah, King James Bible can be troubling. Problematic, to say the least. What happens if he has a Nineveh or Al Anbar flashback in the middle of the Pinocchio's and then goes a little ape shit with his shooting gun? I think it's a fair question. Go home, Kevin Francoeur. Go the hell home. Leave people in peace. Oh, thank you, Benny. It's called a petite mall, Bob. Benny noting in the chat room, sounds like they're hiring people who are likely dealing with PTSD. Good basis for a lawsuit. Reckless endangerment. No doubt. And several of those people are wandering around with high-powered semi-automatic rifles. Any one of those could turn anybody they want to almost like a flip of the switch into a little Sandy Hook, a little Newtown. And make no mistake, Mike Wiggins was right. That's what they want people up there thinking. This arrival of these gun thugs is a terror operation being conducted by GTAC. And the thing is, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the radio, but there's something about this that just strikes me as not being legal. They are up there to defend drilling sites on land that GTAC hasn't even leased. They just hold an option on it. And they're drilling core samples. They are, in a word, protecting property. Well, as far as I know, even with stand your ground laws, as far as I know, the only state in the union that permits the use of deadly force in defense of property is Texas. And with all respect to the folks in Texas who are standing up and demanding that Texas behave like it's still a part of the United States of America, Wisconsin folk will be the first to tell you, they ain't Texas. So these guys are wandering around armed to the damn teeth and perhaps subject to God knows what going funny in their brains at any given moment to do something that they may not have any legal justification to do whatsoever. It might be, although, you know, you never know how law enforcement's going to fall on something like this. It might be that they are, by their very presence, engaging in arrestable conduct. Because a castle doctrine speaks to how one behaves when one's home is invaded. That ain't their home. See how it works? Kevin Francoeur, go home. Go home and get yourself sent to, I don't know, Afghanistan again. I'm sure the pay is much better
now that you're selling your military services to the high bidder on the so-called free market. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, what's happening? Is this Jim?
Yeah, Jim in Louisiana, Stan.
What's going on?
Just getting all the good news from you and periodically Mike Malloy, and it's just...
aren't I just a little walk in the garden?
Yeah, it just seems to be getting, you try and keep optimistic or hopeful, but it's just, the funny thing is, these people live in the same environment. I don't think a spaceship, is going to come take them away once they totally destroy the ecosystem. You know, I mean, I saw that movie, I saw parts of it, last night, Gaslands 2 or?
Yeah.
On HBO last night.
Yeah, Dr. John was talking about it premiering on HBO last night.
And, I just wish I could get some of my family to even be aware of it, but they just kind of think, I think it's partly the belief in a sky spook that, that's not going to happen here. Somehow Jesus won't let it happen, but, I don't think Jesus really gives a rat's ass since he doesn't exist, so.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a line from an old Jefferson Airplane song, Eskimo Blue Day, consider how small you are compared to a cloud of human crowd, doesn't mean shit to a tree.
Exactly. I love that poster I saw, or the quote or whatever, the visual that I saw a lot of years ago that uses the quote from Carl Sagan about the pale blue dot. Are you familiar with that, Jim?
Yeah, basically. I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but I mean...
Well, it's a picture of the Earth that the Voyager space probe turned around and took on its way out of the solar system. And we really are. The Earth is a pixel. One little blue dot. And in the grand scope of just a little teeny tiny chunk of the universe, we are something approaching nothing.
Oh. You notice, this isn't like Star Trek where we're traveling at warp 10 and we're going to find all these inhabitable planets. They're not close.
No.
Stretch the imagination. When Obama got elected, I was hoping for some change, but I knew any change is going to be very difficult because, A, you don't get elected president without certain people's approval, and if you do start to get elected and you're going to really create change in, the status quo, you end up like JFK, or they'll get some scandal, to get you out, some... "quote unquote moralistic scandal."
Exactly.
I try to stay like a Monty Python, always look on the bright side of life, but it's getting. I don't know if that's a function of getting older.
No, I think it's a function of getting real, Jim.
Yeah.
And there's a significant difference. I mean, it takes a real Pollyanna to just look up and say, "Well, all's well." Now, that doesn't mean that we just walk around grim faced and don't enjoy our lives. We are simply reality based.
Right.
And being reality based, we can still have all the fun in the world. We can go to a ball game if we want to, or take in high school football on a Friday night, or go to the drag races, or. You can see how my mind runs. Go bowling. Take in one's book club. We can do all this. But we're a little bit ahead of the game, Jim, because we're doing it with our feet planted firmly on the ground.
Yeah.
And I think we're a little bit better prepared for being that way.
I see my nieces and nephews and my brothers you know, sisters with their kids. They kind of, you know, I tried telling one, a brother of mine who's an attorney, I was telling him about DGR, you know, decreasing resistance. And I could tell when I told him his eyes kind of glazed over a little bit more of that radical stuff. I said, well, all I said was you should check it out, you know, because you're the one with the kids. I mean, when I go off the quote-unquote mortal coil, you know, my DNA trail ends. But you might want to give that a little thought, although that would really give his quote-unquote, well, I mean, he's got to make a living to support his kids, and basically, it's pretty hard to support them, you know, without working within the system. I mean, you know.
Yeah, sure. I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, there were Isaac sent me a tweet earlier today telling me about all the mine workers who were being arrested at a protest up in Fairmont, West Virginia, over the fact that Patriot Coal is robbing them blind, stealing their pensions, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that their millionaire union president, Cecil Roberts, had gone and got himself arrested. And as I explained responding, I understand, I really do. And I understand that corporations behave like corporations. Let's see, who was it? Polaroid did this. Kodak did this. Airlines have done this to their workers. And they've been doing it for years. And I understand people's need to feed their families. Oh, I really, really do. But you can't convince me that Kevin Francoeur took a job with bulletproof security solely to feed his family. He took that job because he likes marching around with a gun on his waist and one slung over his shoulder and a knife in his belt, hollering hoo-ah a bunch, to protect his corporate masters because they pay very well. There's other jobs Kevin Francoeur of Bulletproof Securities could be doing. But maybe when he gets to put his boots on and get his shooting gun and his pistol on his hip and his knife in his belt and hollering hoo-ah, maybe that makes the voices in his head scream a little less loudly. And the same thing goes with these miners. You know, there are miners being screwed out of their pensions with the Patriot deal that never worked for Patriot Coal. It was set up to fail. It was set up as a means whereby pensions could be liquidated. But by the same token, Patriot also had a whole bunch of people working on mountaintop removal operations in West Virginia. So there is not a mountaintop, and let's understand something real quick, Jim. There is not a mountaintop removal worker in Appalachia who has not actively participated, whether he claims knowledge of it or not, has not actively participated in poisoning innocent fellow citizens in the same area. It's just that simple. It's just that stark.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to shed a bunch of crocodile tears for those folks.
No,
because they didn't shed a damn single tear when they were cashing their paychecks after, you know, every 2 weeks after spending 2 weeks poisoning people downwind and downstream from them. I mean, do you know on a mountaintop removal site that when the blasts go off, the company moves all of its workers upwind?
No, but that wouldn't surprise me.
So they won't breathe the poison because the coal company knows it's poison. And anybody who's downwind or downstream, well, you just get poisoned. Tough.
Yeah. God, it's just like, it's pure evil, man. It's really, I mean, it's like with, I heard something somewhere about there were 600 patents on different alternative energies or something to that effect, but who bought them and owns them is like the oil companies or something like that. I don't know where I heard that or read that, but that wouldn't surprise me because they just want to use. They want to make the most money they can out of the oil and the fracking. And, just to make as much, ultimately. ultimate profit. Profit is the only motive. Never mind about human beings and stuff. That's like another thing. They refer to people, not as human beings or people, consumers. That's the only function we're here for. Consume. It should try to get that across to somebody.
Right, and that's what Dr. John was talking about when he said there's a difference between human freedom and the freedom that we define as being able to select among 25 different brands of breakfast cereals.
Or 10 cars, 10 automobiles, 10 different automobiles.
Or 100, right. Because I've heard that argument made. Well, wouldn't it be terrible if everybody just had to drive the same car? Wouldn't it be terrible if all we had was cornflakes? Well, for several million years, the human diet was pretty much the same thing. Grain, some fruit.
Roots and berries.
There was stuff that you hunted and gathered, and there was stuff that you grew out of the ground, and then there was the meat that you ate sparingly. And it seemed to work out well. I laugh a little bit. I saw, I know what it was. I happened to catch a rerun of Andrew Zimmern last night. And I've got some respect for Andrew. He seems like a decent guy. But he happened to be, what was it? Greece. It was Greece. It was his show about, bizarre foods, Greece. And he talked about this, and the quote was something like, "And this is Anna, and she is preparing a traditional Greek dish made with potatoes that goes back generations, no, that goes back centuries." And, of course, because I'm the nerd that I am, and I talked to the TV, Jim, I said, "Not many centuries it doesn't, Andrew. Maybe 5 tops." Because, of course, the potato didn't exist in Greece. That's one of those Colombian exchange products. It came from Peru. I sat in an Afghan restaurant once in Washington, D.C., and ordered their traditional tribal dish made with pumpkin. And I'm wondering, traditional for how long? Because, again, the Colombian exchange. How long do you reckon it took to get a pumpkin to Bactria sometime between 1492 and 100 years ago? I mean, how long does it take for a food to migrate? Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, not only that. I mean, I'm doing a little gardening, and it's tomatoes and da-da-da-da. But not just because you plant a seed and, it's not like the old Peter Tosh or Peter Gabriel. It's not Peter Gabriel. Bob Marley, when every time I plant a seed, you see, kill it before it grows. It takes not everything you plant comes up. You got to watch it, and the slightest little thing, and the plant doesn't grow. I'm getting in touch with my ancestry of just trying to grow stuff. But, because that takes, not everything just goes up with no problems. And it's just disheartening. I guess that's just the way life is. So,
but don't be disheartened because you live in reality. Because the most disheartened people on this planet, Jim, are the people who don't live in reality. They're the people who go through life thinking things are going to be one way, and then they come to the end, and the whole world, their whole life, has not been what it was promised to be, and they go out weeping.
Yeah, well, they
because they lived a lie.
Right.
You, me, others, we get to go out with our heads held high saying, "Did my best." It's like what Kurt Vonnegut wrote about his epitaph for himself. Here I am, God made mud, and God made some mud to sit up and look around, and I was some of the mud that got to sit up, and I said, "Gosh, this is all very nice stuff you've made." And now mud goes to sleep. Lucky mud.
I love
that.
Yeah. not dead yet.
Oh, you will be very soon. You're very ill. Oh, don't be such a baby. Whack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. It's awful good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Take it easy. Have a good night.
Mine as well. You too. Bye now. Calling from the wilds of Louisianistan. That's Jim. And let's go to Jeff on the Skype line. Hey, Jeff.
How are you? Should I say Dr. Bob, or should I just call it Bob?
No, I'm not Dr. Bob.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I got malaria. I think I've sweat off 3 pounds in the last 2 hours. My goal in life is to finish the program and go and jump under the covers, eat ibuprofen like M&Ms, and wait until I get to take another Zithromax.
Well, we're sweating our noses off here, too. Anyway, your last talk about the military person sounds like a movie that someone – I'm not a Steven Seagal fan, but someone sent us many years ago when Steven Seagal came out with a movie called On Deadly Ground, was about the oil companies.
Yeah.
And it was a great piece of work, by the way, but no one understood it. I actually plagiarized the last 3 minutes of that tape and put it on a video we made about renewable energy, because he did a great speech on that. And I got the okay to do it, but it's on a video we have now that we give out to our congressmen and senators and we give it to their staffers. They call them their staffers. And you may tell you've lobbied as much as I have, most probably, or even a little less, but you spend these hours getting appointments with the congressmen and senators, because you have a thing which you want to. I liked it. My deal was promoting renewable fuel. Your deal was stopping mountaintop removal, and then of course you got into renewable energy, and you've spent years doing it, and I can understand your frustration. And then we finally go ahead and we're going to lobby and work within the system. And then we realize that these staffers really don't give a shit. They just don't care. And a matter of fact, if we protest, they sort of laugh at us because we're protesting, as you mentioned, the environmentalists before, not human beings. And then we say, well, we need more press. So we try to get press. And that stopped about a few years after Vietnam. The press was totally bought up. So we said, okay, we're going to start our own radio show. And we put everything we got into the idea that if we can get our voice out, maybe the politicians within the system will actually work for you. I don't think you're ever going to stop this. I was really moved by you talking to Dr. John last. I didn't listen to your program yesterday, but this morning I turn on NPR to make sure the world is still here, or how much of it they're trying to cut away.
Yes, it is, and it's brought to you by Grumman Aircraft.
Right, and I worked for an airline, and my pension, of course, they're still alive, but they're filing bankruptcy. But the point I'm making is I don't know if he's a PhD or not, but the fellow John.
Yeah, he really is.
He was making some great, great points, and he talked about the same thing I talk about, is you're trying to change something within the economic system, and it's not going to happen because of the economic system. You're to a point where I was probably 5 years ago. And I realized that there's something more, and Dr. John was trying to say to you last night, yesterday.
Well, don't necessarily put words in John's mouth.
You know, I listened to the thing, and he was talking mainly about the economic system. He wasn't talking about a measurement for human beings. You both were talking about humanities. You both were talking about a different... As a matter of fact, you mentioned it's going to take eons. The words were yours, eons, that we may get to this one day. I'm not putting words in the mouth, but I listened to that show. Not once. I actually came back in from my function to listen to the last part of the program again to make sure I heard it right. And I emailed you an email when I first heard it this morning about 8 o'clock that I purposely said Dr. John or he and you because he was really hitting the nail on the head. And it would be interesting for you, if you had a chance, just listen to that program. That was he was doing a great job with it. But you're in this, we're all trying to fix this system. Like, and I listened to the last program that Dr. Bill did, and his answer to this was, we have to educate people and we have to get out there and vote. But look what happened. We all thought Obama was going to do a great thing.
Now, wait, I got to stop you there, Jeff.
Okay, I'll hold on.
I never voted for Barack Obama. I voted twice for Barack Obama, but I never voted for him with any sort of understanding that he was anything but a center-right Clintonian pseudo-Democrat.
Okay, let's I would have loved to see someone like Dennis Kucinich get in.
Is a personal friend of mine. I mean, I
love these guys. But the thing is, the reality is, within this economic system, the amount of human labor that's been hoarded, and it's not money, it's human labor and intellect that's been hoarded. So they take their hoarded of our labor and our intellect, and they use it against us. So we actually, and by the way, I cannot blame these psychopaths for being psychopaths, because if you were brought up as a Ku Klux Klanner, and that's all you knew, it's not your fault. That's the way you were brought up. But we're all brought up.
No, but as an adult, certain degrees of responsibility attached, do they not, Jeff?
I am not arguing that, but you're still brought up as a certain way. That's your education. As you mentioned once before, Dr. Bill is a great educator. He's a great scholar for what he does, and that's what he knows. He can't. I mean, that's his thinking process, and it's a great thinking process. I'm not criticizing that. What I see when I hear you, I mean, I'm agreeing with almost everything you're saying, but the question is, how many more years, how many more shows, how much more sweat, how much aggravation and ulcers are we going to take? Because we can't change the system the way it is set up now. And there is something obviously terribly, not just U.S., worldwide, wrong with the way this system is working.
Sure. I mean, Dr. John addressed that very, very elegantly and succinctly when he said that the pastoral lifestyle served human beings ably for something approaching 4 million years. 250 years of capitalism and the ability of human beings to live on the planet is in peril.
It's actually more than that. It actually goes way back to the kings and to beginning about 6,000 years ago, but that's irrelevant. What I'm suggesting is we have to figure out, we have to just not get angry. We have to realize that the politicians are doing what they're hired to do, and literally hired to do. It doesn't matter how many people die, they're expendable population. I made notes while you were talking earlier, but the other call threw my notes off. But anyway, we do other programs, and one of the programs we talk about, we're having a physics professor on next week, and he's talking about what does work mean and what it means in mathematical terms. If we could possibly just get this economic system to work within a humane humanitarian system, a humane economic system, rather than a cannibalistic economic system. If there's any possible way we can figure this out, and I don't care how we do it, but we have to get the economic system to work, so when we elect a person who's supposed to represent their people. It works for the people. There's just no way to do it if the system continues, this economic system continues the way it is. And you can say your feet are planted firm on the ground, we're not going to take this shit anymore. But the reality is, what are you going to do about it? And if you try to rebel, I mean, literally, they stopped all, when I was a union rep for years, and we used to be able to, you know, march in front of a building. Well, they put a law against that, so the most people, you can't even block a door, and the most people you can have in front of any entranceway would be three people, and they have to be so many feet from the door, or you get arrested. I mean, when the Wobblies tried to talk about human labor, they shot them. They killed them. I mean, this has been going on for, it's not new, it's just more obvious now, because more people are suffering from this kind of economic system. And when I hear, you know, you got paid soldiers in your woods, and I mean, of course. And what's next? You know, how do you really think we can stop this without changing the economic system? Do you honestly believe we can work within our political system to actually get people to out there and understand what we're talking about?
Yeah, but Jeff, do you honestly believe that somebody who is watching his wife of 40 years die from cancer is going to go out and campaign for what the economists themselves call a change in the dismal science? No, he's going to go out and he's going to campaign to keep what happened to his wife from happening to someone else's beloved.
I am not arguing with that at all. While you have to put out I was talking to someone in a ghetto area in our neck of the woods, and she said, I've got to take care of the people where the pavement hits the road. That's my view. And I buy that. But I'm not saying, I'm saying specifically that you've got to take care of we're having a baby born any minute now. Of course, we're concerned about what's going on there, but we're still very mindful of what the whole world's about. And I'll give you a for instance. I don't think you can campaign for what I'm suggesting. It's not possible. But what I do when I was talking to several people because of the position that I'm in, I talk to different people all over the world. And when I ask them to go online to look up this measurement, I'm not trying to plug it. I don't want to use your program to plug my concept. I just want a concept out.
No, I mean, I think you should tell people where they can go and listen, like, you know, when the physicist comes on.
Well, we do a program on Going Beyond Radio / Bridges at 8 to 9 o'clock every Friday night. That's live, and then it's, of course, you don't have to listen to it. Then you can listen, turn on anytime you want. It's a podcast after that. The physicist's name is Dr. David Borton, out of RPI in New York State, Rensselaer Polytechnical Institute. And I've known David for quite some time. He's an energy guy. He's really a good guy. But and people could listen to if they want to check out what I'm talking about and what a group of us put together. It's, you can go on Wikipedia, which is the best one to go to, and it's called a human energy renewable measurement. Now, we're not suggesting that this is the be all answer to everything, but when I talk to people all over the world about humanitarian or social justice things in every different country. And when I mention that we have to have a humanitarian economic system, and when I talk to someone in let's say I was on the phone with someone who does computer repair in India, and they did a great job, I mean, a fantastic job. And then I said, well, let me help you now. And I mentioned it to them. And all of a sudden, they look it up because they have more free time to go online and look it up. And then, how can we join? I said, you don't join. You just try to understand what we're talking about and start your own group in your area. And if enough groups start out, you don't need half the world to change the world. You need about, 1%, which is, a half a billion people, which, by the way, is not that many people when you're talking about a 5 billion people planet. If you can just get to that, and with the social media we have nowadays, with shows like yours and show, you know, you're not going to get this on mainstream media. You're not going to get anyone like Dr. Bill's talks on mainstream media. It's not going to happen. But, and you know that. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. And your listeners all know that. I mean, the people in your chat room all know that. I mean, they don't really it's so easy just to badmouth everything. But that's what both sides are doing. I just want to see a humanitarian idea. And I think we could do this. Some humanitarian form of economic system. Now, I'm not saying you should eliminate if I want a gold-plated toilet bowl seat, or if I don't want the education that's available to me, I shouldn't have to have it. If I don't want a fancy house, I want to live in a cabin in the woods in the middle of West Virginia, but I don't want to, you know, they shouldn't be blowing the mountaintop off so I can enjoy the beauty of nature. That's a privilege I should have. But I don't want to be a collectivist, as we talked about. I think maybe Bill O'Brien talked about that. But you need a certain amount of, and that's what the other problem is you need a certain amount of collectivism to gain your individualist. And if you have free time, if you're working 60, 70 hours a week, you don't really have very much individual life left. If you're paying off your student loan and you've got to work 40 hours a month just to pay off the student loan, you don't have any individualism left. And when you listen to these different groups, Tea Party groups, oh, we should privatize everything. Oh my God, man, I don't understand the thinking process, but I do believe that if you did local towns I don't know how it would work out, but the first step is, I think, to get a, as you and Dr. John spoke about yesterday, would be look at the economic system. And when you see that, you're trying to change something. And I listen to what you're doing when you lobby Washington and you rant on the things that are bothering you. I do the same thing, by the way, and my wife gets very mad at me. But there's really, when you step back and you have a cup of coffee and you just think about this a bit, you know, the reality is how are you going to change something within this economic system? Money gets in the way. You require X amount of dollars to run your programming for whatever reason you need. That's the magic number you need. If you didn't have to raise that money, you would have all the equipment you need. Money is...
It's something like Boss Man Wayne said a long time ago, Jeff. The right-wing, primarily right-wing wealthy people like to use this phrase that the liberals and progressives just want to throw money at a problem. And then Boss Man Wayne said, you know, the funny thing is, I have yet to see a problem that you can throw money at that doesn't stop being a problem pretty damn quick. it's like the people who say, well, money can't buy you happiness. Those are usually people who have a lot of money and happiness.
Well, they don't have happiness. I've known a lot of people without money, who actually I know a lot of people with money who are not very happy as well. You know, that's
a flaw in their character.
Yeah, but I can say to someone, if you work with this concept of the human energy renewable measurement, you will have all the schooling you choose if you choose to have it. You will have food, which is clean air, clean water, and clean calories, and you will have a place to live that you can be reasonably proud of. It may not be a mansion, but I cannot guarantee you happiness. It's the same thing if you ask someone if you like wind generators. Well, they can bitch
you know, there's truth in that, Jeff, because I could sit here and lay out a list to people that they would find probably shocking of how we live here. I mean, I joke about, you know, the Horn Manse or the mansion. Well, it's not.
Beautiful spot, by the way.
It's an 80-year-old house that has not well withstood the rigors of four teenagers and three additional infants at least at one point being raised within.
That house, though, Bob, it's the setting. It's a beautiful, beautiful setting.
It's nice enough. I mean, it's... You have to take, I mean, Yeah, I can start walking and wind up in a little corner of paradise.
Of course.
But by the same token, things get you down.
Sure.
They do. I mean, worrying will eat you alive. And well, I spend a ton of time worrying.
Okay. Well,
and another part of the time I spend telling my darling, beloved wife not to worry, that things will be okay.
Well, we got a problem because
I guess that's my family's curse, if you believe in that kind of thing, because my grandmother, born in 1894, once said she desired to write her autobiography and that she was going to call it Ragged Edges.
Okay. Anytime you're blessed or you're cursed with knowledge. We have friends in D.C. we work with regularly. I've been working with you guys 80 years old now, 85 now, 86 now. But he's been my mentor for years. They work with ACOR, American Council. I mean, but anyway, great guy. But when we come up with information, we are actually cursed with this information. And what's chasing you and I, we can easily afford not to do this stuff. But I got little snakes that are in my mind, just like that crazy son guy with the gun strapped to him. But they're chasing me. They're always chasing me. And they say, you know, you got to help me. You just can't sit on a boat all day, or you can't sit on your horse all day. You need to get out there and start working. Start trying to help the best you possibly can to fix the system.
Jeff, I wouldn't know.
Pardon
me? I wouldn't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, really. I cannot think of a trip or a getaway that my family and I have had in the last 10 years that has not been associated with some form of the work and the efforts that we make. I've seen some fabulous places. I've seen some fascinating places.
When Susan and I went on our honeymoon 12 years ago, we actually went all over the world. And you know who we met in every part of the world? An NGO for renewable energy, or in the country, the heads of the different renewable energy groups in 12 or 14 countries. I think it was 12 countries. But that was our honeymoon. We met people talking about what their projects are in their country for renewable energy. That was our honeymoon. Bern, Switzerland, and I can rattle off. But there were some magnificent places, and they were just starting to do putting wind generators up in Ireland. And we actually did a show in Ireland about those wind gens. And that was one of the interesting parts about that. People were bitching about wind generators, and they kill birds. And if you explain to them, they really don't kill birds. They might have years ago, but now they and you can sway that. And then they can say to you, well, they're noisy. And you say, well, they're really not that noisy, and here's why, and you show them, and okay, they buy that. But the minute they tell me they don't like the look of a wind generator, the conversation is over. Because I can't change that. If that's how they believe, then that's it.
They're right, exactly. And we've had this conversation in the past. How do you talk to somebody, Jeff, whose entire way of understanding something is entirely at odds with yours? Since you mentioned wind turbines, I think about all the people who turned out down in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, some several years ago, hollering against a wind farm that they would never see, that they could not hear, and yet complained that it was going to ruin their view shed, that it was going to create viewscape pollution. Just wanted to look at him and say, listen, you godforsaken NIMBY baby. And some people did, because some Coal River folks went there and they said, listen, tell you what, we'll swap with you. You come down here and breathe blasting dust and get your water poisoned and your body's poisoned from mountaintop removal every day of the week, and we'll swap with you. And we'll see how hard it is for us to get on with that viewscape pollution.
Well, the problem here is, again, the propaganda which was paid for. The economic system puts forth a huge anti-renewable, I don't have to tell you that, but maybe your listeners don't know that. I'm sure your listeners know that. That's why it's so nice to go on to a different, but anyway, the economic system is what puts this propaganda out. And they tell you, well, wind generators are terrible. Noisy, they say, oh, you don't have to worry about that mountaintop removal. Of course, it really doesn't affect anybody. And then they tell you about, don't worry about the fracking because, it's really not affecting the water. And the propaganda.
But when somebody uses a phrase like viewscape pollution, Jeff, what you know you're dealing with is somebody who is so mired in their own privilege that they cannot begin to conceptualize that there's anybody else on this entire planet except them and the people who meet their needs.
I'm not going to argue that. What I'm just trying to bring out is that if we can figure out a way, and this is like a task, that I don't believe the normal approach is to try to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, which is bring some sanity to humanity, has to be done in a different way than we're doing it now. I've been doing what I'm doing now for about 40 years. You've been doing it, from what I can gather, at least 25 or 30 years. You're about 10 years or 15 years different. But you've been working as hard as I have. You have, from what I could hear when you speak, the same frustrations as what I have. And your wife has the same frustrations as what my wife has. The reality is that we have to step back and think about a different way of a different approach to actually accomplish what we want to do. And I do not believe with working with
our... Yet I have a question, Jeff.
Go ahead.
Is it possible that we don't have to come up with this different way all by ourselves? Is it possible that the different way may already exist and may have been overrun, overturned by the system that is presently in place? Did you hear Chairman Wiggins talking about the lifeways that have gone back generations upon generations of gathering berries, of harvesting meat in the fall, of catching fish?
I did hear that.
Well, I mean, back to what Dr. John said, that has proven to be, over the course of human existence, a far more successful way of living on this planet than anything that capitalism can ever even approach.
You just made my point. But how do we get to a point where the capitalism system is pervasive? It's worldwide. It has nothing to do with any kind of sanity. The people who are running our world governments are totally, totally disregard any, they don't care. Matter of fact, on Zeitgeist Moving Forward, which was one of my favorite documentaries, they mentioned that if you're a psychopath, you're a great stock, you make a fortune on the stock market because you don't care how many people you kill, your product is killing. I'm not arguing with you about 2,000 years ago things were a little better. It depended upon which king you lived under, but it was still a better quality of life. If you went back to the early hunter gatherers, yes, it was a great quality of life. You didn't live as long because you didn't have penicillin and certain knowledge. But we have the ability now, you're a smart guy. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother this. But anyway,
I understand, but I do have to roll, Jeff, because I got folks blinking on hold.
Good enough. We hope we stimulated some people. Thank you.
All right, you take care, Jeff. Got Bye it. Now. Jeff calling from New York State, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
And how are you this evening?
Well, hey, Jim.
Good. What's going on?
I would guess that you probably have a pretty good idea.
I enjoyed very much your telephone call from Wisconsin. And I've been there myself, and I've seen what you've seen, because I have traveled to Wisconsin extensively, going to Fort McCoy and places like that, and other parts of the Dells and everything, and I can certainly, my heart goes out to that gentleman, and I certainly hope that they can do something about the goon squads they're sending up there to protect, if that's not a very good word.
No. No, I think you had it right. A private army is a public horror.
It is, exactly. But I want you to do me a favor, if you will.
I'll try.
I want you to pull up on YouTube, Did You Ever? And I think it will epitomize the attitude of a lot of people you guys have been talking about tonight. Not your callers, but some of the people that you've been talking about, like this fellow who has a big mansion and all this stuff. D-I-D-U-E-V-A-H-A-H. And I think it'll just, when you see this and listen
no,
to
so
it.
So E-V-A-H?
Ever just spells strangely. Did you ever?
Okay, I'm looking here.
Okay.
I've got one here that's Well Did You Ever.
That's it, Well Did You Ever. And I think you can take a look at these people on the video and the lyrics, and I think it will epitomize certain things that you've been talking about, and I've been talking about ever since God only knows when we first started talking.
Ah, Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra.
Just take a listen to it.
All right.
I think it's worth your time.
Yeah, this being radio, we will lose the video component, but folks can go and look at it at their leisure. Stand by a second.
Okay, I'll be right here.
All right.
Did you ever?
What a swell party this is.
And have you heard the story of a boy, a girl, unrequited love?
Sounds like pure soap opera.
I may cry.
Tune in tomorrow. What a swell party this is. What frills, what frocks.
What broads.
What furs.
What rocks. They're beautiful.
Why, I've never seen such gaiety.
Neither did I.
It's all just too exquisite, really.
This French champagne.
Domestic.
So good for the brand.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, you're a brilliant fellow.
Thank you.
Drink up, Jack.
Please don't eat that glass, my friend. Have you heard about dear Blanche? Got run down by an avalanche.
No.
Don't worry, she's a game girl, you know. Got up and finished for us.
She's got guts.
Having a nice time?
Grab a line.
Have you heard that Mimsy Star?
Oh, what now?
She got pinched in the Astor Bar.
Sauced again, eh?
She was stoned.
Well, did you ever?
Never.
What a swell party this is.
I'm going to have a drink.
I may have a bit of the bubbly myself.
I'm going to dance.
Don't get hurt.
Oh,
it's great.
Oh, it's great.
It's grand.
So grand.
It's wonderland.
La 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 la
ya da da bum bum.
La la
la la la la la ya da da bum.
La 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 ya da da.
We sing so rare,
so rare,
like old Camembert.
Like ba-ba-rum.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-bum.
Don't take that kind of crooning, chum.
You must be one of the newer fellas.
Have you heard it's in the stars? Next July we collide with Mars. Well, did you ever...
Jeez, that's what year? 1940-something, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard it's in the stars? Next year we collide with Mars.
Oh, this goes back to 1920.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
I'll be darned. No, there's... And, yeah, what? The life of the swells? Shall we call it that?
It's elegant. It's so swelligant for so many people. And, of course, written by my old friend Cole Porter.
Yep. Of Piru, Indiana. I will never forget.
Well, Did you ever? And that's the attitude that a lot of people have who are in the privileged minions.
Well, you know, when I pointed out where to go on Google Earth to find one of Chris Klein's mansions, Jim, I got a note back from Dr. John, who said, "Good God, what is that thing that's to the east of the mansion? Is that a go-kart track?" And yes, indeed, it is, in fact, a go-kart track for his kid, and it's laid out like a Formula One course. And, of course, he was able to do that because he's willing to poison people to make the money necessary to build a go-kart track.
Well, it doesn't reflect a great deal on social responsibility and so many other things if he's got a good...
No, and I got to tell you, Jim, it makes it really, really hard on my agnosticism.
Well...
Because I desperately want for there to be a little lesson teaching going on at some point in the indeterminate future. You know, that involves pitchforks and little demons pinching his head off.
Well, you make reference to that area or that realm quite often to be an agnostic, but nonetheless, if that's...
Well, yeah, because I find it frustrating that there isn't one.
Well, there just may be one. Who knows? I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who've done a lot of bad things and who will continue to do a lot of bad things that, unfortunately, are going to impact negatively upon a great number of people.
And then again, was it Camus who said hell is other people? No, or was it Kafka or hell is other people? No, Sartre.
Jean-Paul Sartre.
Yeah, hell is other people.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, that is exactly it. And unfortunately, the people that are representing us in Washington are bought and paid for by vested interests. And the system there is so parochial and self-perpetuating. And that's exactly the way it is. And there are hard people to deal with when you go to Washington to try to get anything except some type of answer that is, of course, signed by an auto pen, you know?
Well, yeah, but let's bear in mind, I was thinking about this earlier today. Remember when the sequestration was making Congress's life a little bit uncomfortable because of cuts to the FAA?
Mm-hmm.
Republican and Democrat stood together, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, and solved that problem in almost record congressional time now, didn't they?
Well, naturally, because that's basically how most of them travel to and back and from their districts and areas of representation, be it a district or a state, yeah. You know? And they don't want to exactly end up like a lot of those people did in SFO this weekend, now, do they?
Well, no.
I mean, nobody wants to end up like that. And of course they went together. You know, you hit the right nerve and hit the right chord. And it's, in their case, it's one of self-preservation and a number of other things, but that's basically what it's about, to preserve them and how long they're here and how much they can glean from whatever as far as...
how much can they take as long as they can take it?
Yeah, exactly. How much they can take as long as they can take it. That's what they're doing. Absolutely. Absolutely, they certainly are. And it's a pity that much more attention is not paid to certain court trials that are ongoing, gavel to gavel, and not to deal with some very serious problems in this country. I mean, the closest I've seen to anything on the for-profit media would be the infrastructure report card. Now, they had that on TV the other night, and it was exactly what I emailed you years ago.
Yep. And, you know, then there's the question of getting, tearing the attention of the American entertainment industrial complex away from Kim Kardashian long enough to pay attention?
You know, I could never understand who in the hell cares about the Kardashians. Or
well, for the longest time, I thought they were a race of characters from Star Trek, Jim.
I do too. And they may as well, and they may very well should be. I mean, you know, they have as much impact and as much of an ability to capture my own attention, because whenever I see that crap, I just turn it straight off. And of course, you know, you've got so many other things that are going on. And what it takes for them to have any attention gathering matter is, well, something really horrible, like, you know, what happened to those people in San Francisco. Now, I don't know how many of those people are accounted for as of yet. I think 63 are yet as of yet accounted for. But, I mean, you know, why does it take something like that to attract other people's attention when what we have basically are a viewing and listening audience who, I guess, are so involved in their own lives and trying to make it or try to provide their kids with things that they can't afford, or trying to escape. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's the total mentality of the whole world. You know, everything is meant to diversify and detract one's attention from the real problems at hand. And in so doing, we are really, in our own way, I guess, either knowingly or unknowingly, being rather Mephistophelian about a lot of serious problems.
Elaborate, please. Just put the flesh on the bones.
Well, basically, I think these people who like this or who don't care, or did you ever, and if that's their attitude and if it's so cavalier, they've just sold their souls to whatever. The devil, whatever. You can call him whatever you want to. The devil takes many forms, Bob.
Blackjack dealers.
Oh, well, not blackjack dealers. Hell, they're paid and they're probably not paid very well, but I'm just talking about people who are in positions of leadership and responsibility. They basically have, in their own minds and in their own consciences, well, if they have a conscience, they played the part of Dr. Faust.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was so the devil. You know, I can't
play. Right, and that whole concept that people like Marlowe were working with is predicated on that same thing that I quoted last night in talking with Dr. John. You know, what profiteth a man that he gain the whole world and lose his own soul?
Exactly. And then, of course, A Man for All Seasons, when Sir Thomas More was being beheaded, before he was being beheaded, when he looked at Richard Rich's Red Dragon. What does it profit a man to gain the entire world but to lose his soul, but for whales? Because the man had perjured himself and condemned an innocent man to die.
It happens more than we know, Jim.
It certainly does. I know you don't care for Thomas More. I know that you don't care for the ass hat that was worn by Scalia or whatever. But that's okay. But nonetheless, the lesson is well taught, and as I have said on this program many, many times before, there are so many people who are so driven to accomplish things that will be able to enjoy it for X number of years. I mean, we all have an expiration date.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And you think about, you know, I focused on Chris Klein this evening. The guy's got mansions. He's literally got it. You know, he's like the old character from one of the Bugs Bunny shorts. My name is Elma J. Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. Well, he's got several, and a yacht, and a go-kart track for his kid. and he's gotten it all by poisoning people. But at the same time, in his own mind, he says, well, you know, we've got to have coal to run America. We've got to have coal for electricity. And thinks of himself, and Jim, I'm sure you can come up with a number of other examples, but thinks of himself as doing a social good.
In what way?
Well, I mean, he's providing the coal that America needs to have its electricity.
Well, you know, that's not...
And you know, when he tries to blow up the Pinocchio Hills, he's telling himself, well, the world has a constant need for iron, so we can make steel and have cars. And,
well, I mean, that's not his fault. He's, you know, basically we're talking about supply and demand here.
Well, it's not a question of fault, Jim. It's a question of the things that we tell ourselves to justify the things that we rather self-oriented goals.
But you know, Bob, I just wonder. When the chips are down, the red light's blinking, when these people are drawing their... last breath, I just wonder what they're going to think in that last place. Credit card's been canceled.
Well, you know, a long time ago I said of Don Blankenship, and you know who he is.
Lovely person, isn't he?
Oh, just a darling. That, you know, Don Blankenship's fundamental character flaw, character problem, tragic flaw, if you will, only it turned out to be tragic for, say, 29 miners at Upper Big Branch as opposed to being tragic for Don, it lies in the fact that nobody ever told him that they don't hitch U-Hauls to hearses.
No, they don't. We've said that many times before on this program. Unfortunately, we have. And, of course, you know, I think that a lot of people who are aware of the problems that are encompassing this world, well, they just won't think about it. All they want to think about is tomorrow and to look on CNNBC and see exactly what the Dow is and what's going on in their little nook of the world, and there's no presence of social conscience and basic humanity. And that's the reason for my call tonight, is basic humanity. That's the reason I had you play that song, because these two drunks up there playing this thing, and I'm sure Cole Porter would not have wanted that to have been to express his view of life, because...
Well, it's not offered approvingly.
Oh, I know.
It's offered as a character portrait. I understood it to be as a character portrait in the negative. These are not two terribly likable characters sitting there in their tuxes and their ties.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. And that's exactly the way the 1% view the world. And it's going to be real hard to overcome their influence, because they have so much power, so much money, so much influence, so much access. And that's the key word.
Yeah, there you go. The world is the 1%'s oyster, and Jim, we're shucked.
Well, it's going to be a hard road to hoe and a stiff mountain to climb, but nonetheless, you know, there it is. And I'll say one thing before I go, and I thought about you when... I thought about you a lot of times when I've listened to your program. We don't always agree. As a matter of fact, you and I would probably be like two cats strung over a clothesline with our tails tied together about something. Well, that's okay. That's the beauty of this program in a way. But I can remember when I was a boy, I used to. Well, I spent, let's see, six, seven, from the ages of 10 to 16. At summer camp in the mountains, away from South Carolina and away from this, that, and the other. And the camp that I went to was called Camp Ridgecrest, and it was an interfaith camp. It was sponsored by the Southern Baptist, but nonetheless, it was truly interfaith, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they had so much emphasis on Indian lore and the role of Native Americans in America. And basically, over the camp was a sign that said, God give us hills to climb and the strength to climb them.
Hear, hear. Jim, be well and have a good evening, my friend.
Good night.
Take care. And thanks for the song.
All right.
Bye. And that's Jim calling from not too terribly... not too terribly far from here at all. A quick note. I'll go back to the phones in a minute. If you're on hold, please stay that way. But I've been sitting on an email here from our buddy Philip. And Philip always writes well. Under the subject line, it can't happen here, based on something I said about Wisconsin versus wherever one happens to be. Philip writes, I can't say it can't happen here, because, in fact, it has. In the city in which I was born, studies showed that children suffered a 10% loss of lung capacity in childhood from merely breathing. For someone like me with chronic respiratory disease, it translated into a lifetime of medication and hospitalizations. Baird McGee polluted the water source in the neighborhood to which my family moved when we left the city, and 40 to 50% of the adults in my neighborhood, including my mother and half of my immediate neighbors, died from cancer in an interval of 15 years. You won't have to worry about being sued by Baird McGee, because their area of destruction became an EPA Superfund site, and they filed for bankruptcy. The company at which I manufactured cameras for 5 years after graduating from college coated everything in Teflon and ended up paying workers' compensation for smokers who contracted what they neatly call called Teflon flu. To those of us who didn't smoke, it laughably claimed that the smoker's fingers were overheated by the cigarettes and activated the inert chemical. We had nothing to worry about. Laughable because the smokers had to smoke outside in the New England winter on smoke breaks, so their fingers were hardly hot by the time they re-entered the workplace. Within 1 year of leaving, I became steroid-dependent to breathe, but when I inquired about any connection between my work and worsening respiratory conditions, I was admonished by my doctors to focus on treatment and getting better. My response, that I wanted to at least understand why I had become worse, fell on the deaf ears of otherwise healthy doctors. When I relocated to Texas, Dallas achieved number 3 in the level of urban pollution, an achievement that made the number of red and orange days in the summer quadruple. Even my healthy coworkers were cautioned to remain inside on such days to avoid headaches and respiratory infections. The personal benefit was that they began to understand and have a wee bit of empathy for my predicament. Then the EPA ordered the city to replace the soil that had been contaminated by a smelter in a Latino neighborhood. You know, it's never in the Bush neighborhoods, is it? For years, and caused the cancer rates and among children leukemia to skyrocket. The calamity in West Texas, in a state without zoning laws in many places, and that routinely disregards environmental regulations, didn't shock me because before it was the huge explosion in Texas City, which all too many have forgotten. Yesterday, the weather person announced our first orange days here in the D.C. area this week. Fortunately, I don't have to worry because after years of fighting disability and being steroid-dependent to breathe, I finally heeded my doctor's advice and retired 9 months early on disability. So it goes. But I won't be going out anytime soon. So I have lived in 3 locations in different regions in which it already has happened. And all 5 of my siblings and I, as well as my daughters, who were born in Dallas, have chronic respiratory disease, and none of us smoke. Just a roll of the dice, I guess. So it's happened here, and in a country in which property rights and ownership reign supreme in the view of the courts and our laws, and the majority believe that their creator gave them dominion over all and will bail them out in the end. The prognosis is not pleasant. I spoke with a friend in Wisconsin last year about what is happening there and talked to him about Mike Wiggins and his tribe's struggle. which is our battle, and my friend considers it a lost cause. I want to believe that he is wrong, and there is still hope in collective nonviolence resistance. The alternative of envisioning worsening breathing problems in direct proportion to the decreases in environmental air quality in the coming years is not something I want to anticipate. Be well. Signed, Philip. Like I said, Philip's notes always bring a whole lot to the table. And the only thing I'll suggest is that the alternative to nonviolent resistance is to go home, close the door, if you've got one, sit down, and wait to die. And given those two choices, I'll choose activism every time. Thank you, Philip. Thank you very much. And so it is that we find our way to the end of the program. Thanks to Jack and Sal and Tamara and Patrick for getting us down to $300 we need to raise this evening. It'll be $450 tomorrow. Jack wrote a note. Subject line, money and happiness. Bob, I hear you, man. Maybe money can't buy happiness, but it can increase the scope of what you can control or what problems you can solve. I can never understand what it's like to spend a lot of time just worrying. Though I'm sure many of the details would be different, there's probably plenty we have in common. And it's not just the worrying. There's the humiliation. And speaking of humiliation, I recently had to go to the doctor. Yeah, it is humiliating, isn't it? And I pretty much don't go unless I have to. My doctor's great, but dealing with the money people in the front office is an emotional beatdown. I don't even like to go into the details. But if you have to get help or have it offered by family or friends, you can add guilt to the list. Sure, I know it's proper to feel and express gratitude for that help, but the speculation of whether that help costs someone else something or cost them nothing leads to either guilt or humiliation, while speculation leads to worry. Jack, it sounds like you live in my neighborhood. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening on the podcast. Time is the most finite resource any person's life, and that you share it with us is tremendous. Time to knock off for a bit. Go and eat some ibuprofen like M&M's. Wait till noon tomorrow when I can take my next Zithromax. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. Lottie and Sparky and Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch. And to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.